This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Brett Kilborn, who's the Director of Regulatory Services and the Associate Counsel at the United Powerline Council. That's a council, the first time SEL and the second time CIL. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thanks, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're in Canada as we speak?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We last spoke at the end of November last year, and you provided our listeners with a kind of general orientation and introduction to Broadband Over Powerline. What I'd like to do now in the few minutes that we have is sort of update the story and get from you the perspective of the organization you work for and some more details about where Broadband Over Powerline stands right now at the beginning of March 2005.
Okay. The industry is continuing to move forward. We started out doing technical trials with utility companies to determine, how well the technology would actually perform. We've advanced beyond that to the point where now we're doing market trials throughout the country. And those market trials, some have actually gone fully commercial. And an example of that is Synergy, where you've got 40,000 homes passed. City of Manassas is also deploying BPL throughout the city to 20,000 end users. There are other co-ops and munis in other parts of the country that are also launching commercial deployments on a smaller scale.
Okay. Let me ask you about two issues here. The New Millennium Research Council issued a report just a few days ago in which they say that BPL is, quote, primed for real growth in 2005 and beyond. Is your group associated with them? Did you commission this study? Did they do it on their own?
No, we don't have any relationship with the NMRC.
Okay, and have you looked at over their report?
I'm familiar with it. I haven't looked at it ever in detail.
Okay, do you have any comment on that projection? Does that make sense to you?
No, I agree with the general assessment that this is going to be an important year for BPL. It's the year where you're going to see more commercial deployments than you have in the past. And it's, based on the success of those deployments, I think you'll see a lot of other utility companies jump on the bandwagon.
Now, there's been some controversy, particularly in Pennsylvania, about the role of cities in providing broadband service to their citizens. Has your organization been involved in that issue on the federal or state or local level? And if so, where do you come down on it, and what have you been doing in that regard?
We've been actually intimately involved with it, not only in its current state in terms of restrictions on broadband, but previously in terms of state barriers to entry against municipals being able to offer telecommunications. We actually supported the Texas folks in an appeal of an FCC decision that refused to exactly preempt this Texas law that actually restricted the munis there. We supported that case to the D.C. Circuit. Unfortunately, in that case, it actually the decision by the FCC was upheld by the D.C. Circuit. There was a subsequent case, the Missouri Municipal League versus the FCC, that went to the 8th Circuit. Same, procedure where you had an FCC decision that was being appealed to the 8th Circuit.
What was the substance of the arguments in those cases?
It's basically public policy versus sovereign immunity. The public policy obviously being the strong argument in support of munis being able to get into telecom in that case.
Right. Who was claiming sovereign immunity?
The states. The concern the FCC had, the concern the FCC had was that if the FCC were to preempt a state from restricting a municipal from getting into the business,
right,
that they would be stepping on the toes of sovereign immunity.
So is it of the states?
The relationship between a state and its municipals.
So the question was if the municipalities wanted the FCC to say that it was okay for them to provide a broadband service, and the states were saying that for the FCC to do that would be an inappropriate exercise of federal power against the states. Is that what?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing here is what you're dealing with is a section within the federal statute that actually authorizes the FCC to do exactly what the FCC said it didn't have the power to do, which was preempt state restrictions. But the way the FCC interpreted it, that provision, Section 3 was that it only applied to restrictions against private entities, not public.
Okay.
And so they did actually have the authority to preempt, and Congress put in that authority for the express purpose.
Did the law say that the FCC... Did the FCC say that... Did the Congress say that the FCC may do that or shall do that?
It's discretionary, yes. I mean, the FCC has to review to determine, you know, whether the restriction has either it's a per se violation or it has the effect of prohibiting competition. So
in fact, the FCC...
There's some discretion on the part of the FCC as to whether the state statute would necessarily be preempted.
So the FCC has the power to tell the states that they can't interfere with the city's desire to provide broadband to their citizens?
But our position, yes. We believe the Congress gave the FCC jurisdiction to go ahead and preempt not only restrictions against private entities, but also public entities as well.
Did the FCC say that it couldn't do it or didn't want to do it?
The FCC said it... did not have the authority. It didn't say that it didn't want to, and in fact, in the next breath, it discouraged states from passing similar laws.
Okay,
but it
said because it involved a public entity, the cities, that it believed it didn't have the power to do that preemption, although you did.
The essence of their argument was their hands are tied.
Ah, okay.
And that case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. We actually won at the Eighth Circuit, but then subsequently when it went to the Supreme Court and UTC was involved there as an intervener, actually an amicus, we lost.
Is the implication of that now that the FCC is free to not stop states from prohibiting municipalities from providing broadband service to their citizens?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sent the wrong message to the states. I mean, we were worried that there would be a lot of other states that would pass similar laws.
Right.
That didn't come to pass. So in that respect, we were relieved. But now that munis are going into broadband, we're starting to see a disturbing trend in the states.
So what kind of strategy? So how are you? Are you working with them in some organized way to defend them against state impingement here?
Yeah, we're assessing our options at this point.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they've already had one success of in Indiana of killing one bill.
Right.
Every time you kill one, there's three or four more that pop up. So,
what interest do states have in prohibiting their municipalities from providing broadband service in a competitive way to their citizens?
I'm sorry. Hold on a minute.
Yes.
I hope you can edit that out.
I will.
Knocking at the door.
Right. Okay.
Go ahead. Ask the question again.
Right. Right.
A little distracted.
What interest do states say or actually have in prohibiting their constituent municipal organizations, the cities, from providing another form of broadband communication for the citizens of those cities?
Well, they do have that authority.
They have the authority. What motivation would they have, though?
Good question. I can't understand it from a practical standpoint. I mean, the argument goes that by virtue of allowing municipal providers to get into the business, that you would discourage private investment. You would also create a conflict between municipals that may be regulating private entities and municipals that are competing.
Okay, that's the argument. Are there any other entities in your purview behind the state's interest in doing this?
Other entities as in competitive entities?
That's correct.
I think I hear the subtext of your question.
That's the subtext.
Yes, I mean, very definitely, you know, the SBCs of the world definitely had a hand and actually went all the way to the Supreme Court to defend, you know, the FCC's decision as it pertained to telecom restrictions.
With the high level of mergers among telecom companies and the growth of SBC in particular, is there a threat, do you think, that they will have enough political power to shut off the technical options that broadband over power line could offer cities as another solution, as a competitive solution for their citizens?
Yeah, I mean, it is a disturbing trend. To the extent that it applies to broadband, presumably it would apply to VPL as well. Now, The interesting thing is that the way that the laws are written, they can be, I don't know, not absolute prohibitions, number one.
Right.
There can be so many different regulations that they ladle on top of it.
Right.
That it makes it practically difficult for the municipals to actually offer service. So that's what we're seeing in a lot of the cases right now. But there's also a concern that the way that these laws are written, they're written so broadly that they may even prevent the municipality from offering, you know, lease capacity, essentially. I mean, even where they were, you know, just simply partnering with a private entity. And that would really hurt BPL directly. I mean, to the extent that you've got an argument out there that municipals shouldn't be providing service, you know, that's one thing. If you've got a law out there that says that municipals can't even offer equipment or services
right.
to others,
or essentially
private,
right.
then the argument really loses its principal basis, right? But it really directly prevents municipals from getting into the game at all.
Okay.
Even on the lease or
right. So there's one level in which cities are not allowed to become internet service providers, but you're saying that the next stop on the slippery slope here is to prohibit municipalities from making the power lines that they may own available to third-party private companies
right.
For whom these arguments against municipal ownership don't apply.
That's right.
And presumably a new rationale will be developed to justify that.
The hypocrisy of the argument is that, you know, the private entities have no relief.
Right.
I mean, the concern is that, you know, if the municipalities are getting into the business, that they'll have the incentive to discriminate against private entities that they regulate.
Right.
But if that were the case,
right.
then those same private entities would have the option of going to the FCC and seeking preemption. So
right.
they are protected. Their rights are protected.
There's also the fact, isn't there, that these entities, SBC, for example, is a multi-$10 billion company, and the municipalities that they claim will be a severe threat to their competitive position are mostly out of money.
I mean, I don't know if they're mostly out of money, but yeah, comparatively, they're nowhere close to the revenues that SBC draws in every year.
Okay. Talk about the case for BPL as opposed to municipal Wi-Fi, which in the case of Philadelphia, for example, Philadelphia has been considered municipal BPL. It's been considering mm-hmm. municipal Wi-Fi. That's what got Verizon up in arms and went to Harrisburg to try to stop them, which they failed, apparently. What's the argument for BPL versus or as a complement to Wi-Fi?
We see BPL not necessarily as a silver bullet. We see that Wi-Fi and BPL are complementary technologies. So, for example, Amperion is one company in the BPL space that actually uses Wi-Fi to reach the home.
Right.
Conversely, you've got you know, other technologies that use a Wi-Fi or WiMAX component to actually provide backhaul. So you're taking the signal, injecting it on the low voltage side at the transformer. But the signal basically is going back wirelessly. So there are just a number of different ways that people can use BPL to improve the performance and the bottom line of their services.
So essentially you see it both technically and politically or commercially as complementary to these other technologies and the people who deploy them.
Right.
Okay. Now, there's the issue that I just focused on in an interview I did with Dave Sumner, who's the CEO of the American Radio Relay League, which has filed some papers with the FCC asking them to reconsider the points they made in their report and order of October 14th, 2004 on the issue of radio interference from BPL against amateur radio operators. What's the position of your organization on that, and where do things stand either nationally or in specific locales regarding the problem of radio interference from BPL against amateur radio operators?
Well, I mean, our position is the same as the FCC. I mean, the FCC has recognized that there is a remote possibility of interference. But, you know, and the way to guard against that is to put in safeguards such as interference mitigation techniques and, you know, an access BPL database that provides notification to the amateurs and other licensees that are in that same high-frequency band that may experience interference, however remote, so that you can go ahead and resolve those limited cases of interference quickly and effectively.
The United Power Line Council is pretty much the primary industry group that represents the interests of actual and potential BPL providers?
That's correct. I mean, we've been around since early 2002.
Okay.
Previous to that, we had a Powerline Telecom forum that resided within UTC.
Right.
And we've been advocating before there was even a BPL. I mean, back then it was called PLC, PLT.
Right. So you pretty much speak for the organized industry.
That's right.
Okay. Are you in communication with ARRL to talk about this, or do you just both make presentations to the FCC?
There's some communications between ARRL and UPLC.
Right.
We both work on a study group related to standards.
Right.
IEEE for BPL. So we, correspond that way on an ongoing basis. In the past, during the FCC's proceeding, we worked with ARRL to try and resolve cases of interference.
Okay. Now, every time I talk to them, they say they're not against BPL. They're just against it interfering with their operations. Mm-hmm. Presumably, you've got nothing against amateur radio operators and don't want to interfere with their operations.
Well, I mean, that's the thing we keep scratching our heads about is that, they have rights. We don't. So
they have rights as licensed.
We are obligated to protect them. Their concerns seem to be somewhat quizzical. I mean, under the Part 15 rules, we are prevented from causing any harmful interference to those licenses.
Right. They acknowledge that, but say that when they complain to individual utilities, they don't get resolution, and then they apply to complain to the FCC about the problem and about presumably the non-response of the utilities, and then the FCC sends people out but don't talk to their people, and then the issue isn't resolved, and then they have to file these petitions for reconsideration with the FCC. Is there anything more that you feel you could be doing to talk to them to resolve these issues either on a national or local level, or are you satisfied that you're doing all you can to resolve their complaints?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, now the FCC has put in place this BPL database, UPLC is going to be managing that, we hope. And in that role, in that capacity, we will be acting as a facilitator towards the resolution of any interference complaints.
Okay.
So I think that's the answer.
Say just a little bit more about that database, how it's supposed to work, who's going to use it, and how?
It's a centralized database of the different BPL deployments across the country.
Right.
And basically, an operator will post not only the zip codes in which they operate, but a certain technical information about the frequencies that they operate in.
Right, and the power they use on those frequencies?
Not necessarily the power, but manufacturer that they use, et cetera.
Okay.
And the main issue is, you need the zip code to determine location, and you need to, have the frequencies so that you can determine whether the interference that might be occurring
right.
is caused necessarily by BPL, or at least you have probable cause, I guess. In terms of determining whether the interference that the amateurs are complaining about is BPL interference. I mean, we've had instances, going back to your original question about, what the BPL industry is doing in response to interference complaints. We've had interference complaints in the 800 megahertz band, and, we can be pretty sure that that's not BPL interference.
So what you're saying is then that all the companies, all the utilities that are going to be offering BPL will file with this database information about the frequencies they're using and the zip codes they're using them in, and then how will the ARRL or individual radio operators who are having problems be able to use that database?
It'll be publicly accessible.
Is it up and running yet?
It will be soon. If they're experiencing interference, they would go to this database, they would plug in their zip code.
Right.
And if it came back, if there was a match,
right.
the BPL deployment in their area, and then they would receive contact information from the BPL operator.
Will, in the case where a lot of them already have the contact information, and they run their own tests, and they know there's a zip code, and they contact them, and they don't get a resolution, is UPLC going to do anything to encourage its members to act more aggressively to resolve the issues?
Well, we're doing what we can,
right.
And so are the BPL operators. Again, nobody wants to create interference here.
Right.
The question, I guess, boils down to what is harmful interference, and we went through this process, for example, in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the FCC basically went down and did their own test just to determine whether any of the interference that was being complained about was necessarily harmful, and its determination it found that it wasn't. It had some recommendations about how to improve the mitigation techniques that were being used, but none of the interference that they found down there was harmful. So that's one of the issues that we're going to run into.
Okay. Do you feel that these ongoing complaints are going to seriously jeopardize the rollout of BPL nationally or in particular locales?
Yeah. I mean, my concern is that you're going to have, whenever there's a deployment, people complaining automatically. I think that was also a concern of the FCC, and there's actually some text in the decision that says to the effect that, we expect that these complaints are going to be levied in good faith. And so there was a clear warning from the FCC that, discouraging that kind of behavior.
Okay.
But to the extent that, that does happen, that's going to discourage folks from getting into this space, I would think. It takes a pretty stiff back to stand up that kind of, opposition.
Okay. We've talked about SBC and as a sort of a political player. What about the issue of most people who want broadband now have it either through cable or telcos? BPL is coming in here as a third wire, but it is the third wire. There are already two. What does the picture look like to you in terms of the viability of a third alternative here in the instance that most early adopters, middle adopters have broadband now, and especially in urban areas, and then I'll go to rural, but what's your view of your competitive position going into a market that's already pretty well covered?
Well, we're already seeing that BPL can compete where DSL and cable is already available.
It cannot.
Can.
Yes, it can?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, in the deployment with Cincinnati Synergy, they're seeing take rates of 15% there.
And you consider that good?
Yeah, I mean, that's the national average generally, and those are, by and large areas that are not, served by two providers.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the issue is, I still think that there's an opportunity that exists out there, even though cable and DSL do cover a lot of the country.
Right.
There are a lot of pockets that are not currently served, number one. And number two, we can compete both on quality and price. Everyone's recognized that one of the things that's held broadband adoption back has been the price point. In most areas, DSL and cable is, available upwards of, $35, $40 a month.
Right.
We've had our deployments come in at price points of, $26.95 a month. And that's without a long-term contract or a teaser rate.
So right.
We think we can compete necessarily on price, and we're also encouraged that the technology is improving in terms of performance. The chip speeds now are going from 45 megabits per second to anywhere up to 200 megabits per second. Once that new technology gets deployed, we'll easily be offering services in the 6 to 12 megabit range. So that'll keep pace with cable and DSL.
So you believe then you can, even as the third wire in a locale, you can compete on price and speed?
Yep.
What about rural areas? Do you have an advantage there because they tend to be more underserved?
No, it's interesting because, it sort of goes back to your original point about municipals.
Right.
One of the handicaps that the cable and DSL folks have is that their network architectures are designed for big head ends and central offices.
Right.
And those don't exist out in the rural areas.
Right.
You do have some isolated rural communities that can be economically served by BPL because we don't really have that kind of capital intensive investment that's required to serve those areas. There are technical limitations that come into play when you try and serve, a farm at the end of a 10-mile run.
Right.
So for those types of potential customers, BPL may not be the right technology, but, the technology also continues to mature, and so some of that may change. But I haven't seen anything change as far as cable and DSL is concerned in terms of their limitations. That's pretty much remained constant. I'm pretty confident that there's an opportunity that exists out in those isolated rural communities.
What about competition in those isolated rural communities from WiMAX?
Well, there again, I mean, this is where, you know, you could have complementary solutions. For example, you know, WiMAX could provide general coverage, and then you would actually, you know, use, you know, power line to route the signal into the home.
Right.
You know, more be ubiquitously, that kind of thing.
For the last mile, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up by you going out on a limb and predicting where you think BPL is going to be a year from now or at the end of this year?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to defer on sheer numbers, but
right.
I do think that you'll see, you know, a definite upturn in terms of commercial BPL deployments this term. I'm not sure, you know, whether I should predict how wide they're going to be. That's
right.
The thing. One of the things that's going to determine whether the BPL becomes a truly ubiquitous service is the extent to which it is used for internal applications. So if you're a utility company and you're going to be using this for, say, AMR or outage detection, naturally, you're going to want to deploy BPL throughout your entire distribution grid. Conversely, if you're just trying to, you know, make the business case strictly on commercial applications alone, you're probably going to, you know, deploy in a sort of smart build approach to certain communities first and then incrementally out from there. So that's going to be the interesting thing to watch in terms of access BPL. The other thing that's you know, taking place right now and which is interesting to watch is the in-building BPL. Already you've got an announcement that one of the BPL providers, Telkinet, has landed a big contract to light up all the Trump buildings in New York. They are already serving other in-building landlords, the landlord market, in both in-building and campus environments. There are also other, to the extent that, you know, access can serve residential, it can also serve in-building.
This is essentially, this is essentially.
You actually see a new market evolving in BPL, you know, apart from strictly, you know, residential.
This is essentially home plug standards within buildings.
In this case, it is. I mean, in the case of Telkinet, they use a home plug standard, but it's not necessarily a home plug standard.
So this is the use of the same sending internet signal over electric power lines within a building
rather than
along a power line.
Same concept.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for bringing us up to date, and maybe in less than another year we can talk again and see how some of these things are playing out and get the latest on the technology and the politics and the commercial feasibility and deployment of broadband over power line.
Okay, great. Thanks for talking with me, Mark.
You're very welcome. Thanks for talking to us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.